Good afternoon. This is Digital Dave, and I'm seated with Mr. Bill David of EAA Chapter 582, Toledo, Ohio, who has the most interesting story to tell. And let's just get right into it.
All righty. Where do I start?
How about once upon a time in a land far, far away?
In a land not too far away.
Not too far away?
A small town in Ohio, Toledo, in case you've ever heard of it. I happen to be a member of EAA Chapter 582, and I'm a newsletter editor for them. And we have an annual fly-in, a small fly-in. We have usually a B-17 will come down from the Yankee Air Museum, which is only a 15-minute flight away. And we have a nice little weekend fly-in. And last year, about this time, a few months prior to this time, a friend of mine said he read this book and he learned of this fellow and of this event that took place in World War II, and that we should maybe think about making him the centerpiece for our air show and revolving around his experience in this mission. And I said, what was that all about? Well, the bottom line was this fellow who lived down the street from us was the sole survivor of a three-man team that parachuted in behind enemy lines and helped hatch a plan to free 513 downed American airmen. And I'm like, okay, how come I don't know about this?
That would be my first reaction.
You know, I'm probably like you. I read airplane stuff all the time, always have, war stuff. I'm interested in that. And I never heard of it, so... I learned a little bit about the story, and I said, okay, yeah, well, let's do this. It's an interesting story, and this fella, Art Jabilian, just lived a town over. So we put together this little recognition, or what would you call it, honoring ceremony.
Yeah.
For this fella, this World War II veteran, and it went kind of like this. Since they saved 513 downed American airmen, we planted 513 flags in the ground to represent one life of each American that he saved that could go on to father a family after the war. So this was quite a thing, and I learned a little bit more about what it was and how it all came about and the fact that nobody knows about it.
This, you're saying that this mission 60 years later is still virtually unknown?
It is unknown, not virtually. Just a few years ago, a fellow by the name of Gregory Freeman out of Atlanta, Georgia, wrote a book called The Forgotten 500. And this is how Brian turned me on to this whole story. And I read the book, and the book kind of blew me away because this is a real thing. It's really happened. And what's incredible about it is they got him out with airplanes.
They flew airplanes in and rescued these 500 men, 513 men.
They flew DC-3s or C-47s in and landed on the top of a mountain or a hill in Serbia that was... It wasn't really an airfield. They just cleared the rocks and the trees out of the way. And five DC-3s on the very first mission found the place at night with no navigation equipment, no ADF, no DME, no GPS. All they had was a watch and a compass and a map. And they found this hill. And then the incredible thing is that they were able to land on this runway, this very short runway, in the middle of the night. So that's the basis of the story, and there's more to it, but the key element is that nobody knows about this.
Yeah.
And we're in the process of bringing him to Oshkosh because it's an incredible story, and we thought this would be a good place for him to tell us about it. But he became very ill, and we are unfortunately not able to bring him here. In fact, he was not supposed to live but just a few weeks. But it didn't quite work out like that. Art actually started to get a little bit better. Now it was going into the winter, and in the process of all this interest in this air show, and we were able to get from United States Congress a letter of recognition for Art. And I asked one of them, Colonel Mike Digby, if he would present this letter of recognition to Art. He made it the object or the focus of one of their base meetings that they were about to have. It turned from just a little thing into a fairly big thing, in which they had the Major General A.J. Foyt on base to present him some letters of recognition from the National Guard and from the United States Air Force. I'm quite proud to say that largely to our efforts, Chapter 582, if you do some research on this, this is the first official recognition of these missions, which were called the Halyard missions back in World War II, that was public recognition. In fact, General Eisenhower recommended to Harry Truman, the president, one of the leaders of the resistance, a fellow by the name of, I'm going to do the best I can with his name, Draza Mihailovic, be recommended the Legion of Merit. It's a medal. It's the highest medal that person that is not from the United States can get.
Okay.
And Harry Truman agreed to do that and gave Draza Mihailovic this medal posthumously. And I've been told that's the only time that's ever happened in this country. So this fellow
Where's that medal today?
Well, that medal went into a drawer, and it sat there for something like 50 or 60 years. And until recently, through this book, Forgotten 500, and somebody in Serbia got a hold of this, found the medal, and actually had a ceremony that was attended by the United States military over in Serbia. His daughter, and I'm sorry, I forget her name, they presented her this medal on behalf of her father. So we're at a time right now where we're trying to repair relationships with Serbia. And Admiral Mullins, he's a chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, actually wrote a letter just before Brian and myself showed up over at the 180th, issued a letter to them aligning them with the Serbian military. In other words, it was a sister organization or a brother organization to them. So they opened their doors and they allowed us to have this and actually contributed greatly to this little ceremony, which was the first public official recognition, official being the government and the military.
Now, you were saying that Art, I believe you said his name was?
Yeah, his name is Art Jibilian. He goes by Jibby.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's easy enough. He is actually going to be here at Oshkosh?
Yes. This is not on any schedule. We just put this thing together through the help of everybody here at the AA. And they have opened the doors all the way up to, and I'm going to mess people's names up because in the past few days I've been trying to remember, I think, about 30 names. And Dick Nepinski has been briefed by Brian on this, and they've opened up the doors. I understand Tom is on board with it, and everybody down the line, and especially Danny Clism, is going to do a little presentation.
Is this something that we, the average Joe walking here, can go watch, go see?
If you come to this, which it'll be on Thursday at 11:30 at the Announcers Building, is that what it is?
Yeah, the Comm Center, Air Show Center.
You'll actually be a part of history because through the EAA, not only Chapter 582, but EAA National here as well, this will be the largest gathering of people to ever be exposed to this story at one time. But for political reasons, the story has been kept under wraps. You go back to 1940, Art was actually more or less drafted in the OSS because he could speak a foreign language and he was an excellent radio operator.
Okay, so now it's time.
I think it is time. And I don't know why I'm pushing this story or trying to bring it to light, but I think the American people need to know about it.
Well, I think we should do the man of service and show up. Now, when is that again? When and where?
It's going to be Thursday morning, 11:30 at the...
Well, the announcer stand.
The announcer stand.
That's good enough. Right. That's right at Air Show Center for you people.
I thought I would call the Tuskegee Airmen and see if they would like to help us get this story out because, turns out, the first mission was flown at night, but subsequent missions were flown in the daytime. All missions took place over about a six-month period of time, and they could only take out 10 or 15 people at a time on this airplane because it was a short runway. But when they had to go to daylight, guess who provides top cover for them?
The Tuskegee Airmen.
Right. So they were involved in making it successful, and they actually provided cover on a few of the missions as documented that they held Germans at bay. The Germans were trying to approach the landing zone, and the DC-3s were there, and the DC-3s were able to get out because the Tuskegee Airmen kept them at bay. And then not all the survivors got out. Remember, there were hundreds of them.
Right.
So the Tuskegee Airmen came over and put on an air show, probably not unlike the one we're about to see this afternoon here at Air Venture. And so that lifted the spirits. I actually have some letters from survivors that are gone now, but saying how about they were at that airfield that day, and to see the Tuskegee Airmen fly over and put on that air show and then leave gave them hope that they were going to be on the next airplane out.
Well, that's quite an amazing story. So that's Thursday at 11:30 at the Announcer Stand Air Show Center.
That is correct, sir.
All right.
I hope to see you there.
You may. You may. Thanks for joining me, Bill.
Come be a part of history.
I would love to.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. This is Digital Dave, and you're listening to EAA Radio.